everyone, and welcome to Well Tended Life. I am your host, Carrie Wild, a speaker, writer, and heart cultivator who is on a mission to help you grow and help me grow through any season. I am here today with my very special guest, Carrie Schmidt, an author and artist who has agreed to come and chat with us in this Practice of series that was inspired by the words of my great-great-grandmother in her famous book, The Secret Garden. And in there, she writes, "You just try it," urged Martha, handing her the skipping rope. "You can't skip to 100 at first, but if you practice, you'll mount up." And here's the truth. What we choose to do every day, what we intentionally practice, really matters in this quest to living a well-tended life. And so far in the series, we've explored the practice of meditation, the practice of magic, the good kind, of course, the practice of healthcare, creativity, and this week, Carrie's going to talk to us about the practice of turning burdens into blessings, which sounds a little bit like magic, I think. And I'm excited to get into it with her. Welcome, Carrie. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
It just occurred to me, and I don't know why this just occurred to me, but this, like, it is Carrie interviewing Carrie today. Except okay. It is spelled different. She is a C Carrie. I am a K Carrie. Mm-hmm. And I'm certain that, and we have not talked about this yet, but I'm certain that no one ever spelled your name right growing up, did they?
Yep, that's correct.
No. I always swore when I grew up, I was like, I'm never going to name my kids anything that's not written on a mug or an eraser or a pencil. Like, I wanted so bad for, like, to have the personalized name thing. And it didn't work out for me. I still name my kids weird names. So it seemed really important at the time. But why don't you introduce yourself to our audience and tell us who you are and what you're up to.
So I am a full-time artist, an author, and an art facilitator, teacher for online classes and in-person retreats. So that's what I do. Yeah. And I write books, I create products, and basically I've devoted my life to my art practice as my way of connecting with other people.
Have you always been creative? Is this something that, you know, as a child you were always creative, or is something you cultivated later on in life?
Yeah, I think I was always the happiest when I was creating as a child. And then I got away from it in my teen years and in my early 20s. And really, everything fell apart. If you look at, like, the life graph, the farther I got from creativity, the more difficult and the more I struggled. And it was just the hardest time in my life when I left that part of me, which I equate to my soul or my spiritual, like, kind of guidance, is my creativity. So I don't think it's just coincidence that when I kind of walked away from that, a lot of kind of I created a literal hell on earth for myself. I went through a really hard time. Yeah, I mean, in that sense, I don't think we understand our power, that we actually are creative. And some people say you're either creating to help yourself or to hurt yourself. There's really no middle ground. So I came back to it because of illness, which is, you know, brings me kind of to our topic about the art of creating blessings out of burdens. So I can share about that if you want.
Of course. Well, you know what, first, before we go digging too deep in that, let's tell me more about, like, what's going on in your world right now. What season are you in? Just to give everybody a framework. Like, I know you have a new book on the horizon, like, any day now, right?
Right. Yep. Yeah. So, I like to think I'm perpetually blooming. I always say I'm a perennial.
I like that.
Yeah, I'm a perennial. So that, you know, there's always different phases I'm going through. But I really do relate to the cyclical nature of flowers and nature. So right now, I'm wrapping up my book, which took over a year. And so trying to get that out into the world and share my story. And the book's called The Story of Every Flower. And it is based off, that title is about a journal writing I did, how I see my life as the story of a flower, which, you know, starts in darkness and then just a tiny crack pops through, and then just that sort of growth into fullness. So that's the whole basis of the story of my story. But at the same time, you know, I'm always like blooming new things. So that's ending, but now I'm birthing something else. I'm working on a picture book, and you know, I feel like I'm always going through different phases. That's kind of where I'm at.
How are you? I've asked this to several guests because it seems a lot of people I've talked to kind of are exactly where you are, which you have one foot in one season and kind of one foot in another one. Because although, yes, you just finished your book and it's about to come to fruition, even with that book, there's another season that you're going to have to go through with the launch. But then you've got another foot in another season. How are you good about, you know, releasing the last when, you know, it's time to move on? Or do you find yourself struggling in those times? Or do you like to live in those seasons? It almost sounds like you like to live in those seasons.
I love it. I love every phase of it. And, you know, I feel like I'm an artist. Most of the time I'm making, and it's very rare where it's like one moment when something's complete and it's so short. And it's like you work and work like for over a year, and then it's like, and it's done. And it's that moment where you're like, wow, this doesn't happen that often, where you can sit and be like, oh, I finished something. And usually I'm in the process of just making. And I mean, I do. I love every single phase. I love, you know, I've learned to love those dark moments, which again is kind of where my story begins. And I've learned to value them as like a source of a lot of information. So, you know, even as we're going through this COVID lockdown, I feel like I have already practiced sort of the art of, okay, well, what is the message here? What is there to learn? Like, this is temporary. I know everything's temporary. So, I feel like, I do appreciate all the different seasons. And, I actually like to have multiple things going on. So, I started a publishing company. So, you know, that's new. Like I've been doing the art for 10 years. So I feel like I've gained some knowledge and experience, and it's gotten a little easier as far as the business, but now it's like, but I'm creating something else. So I think we all kind of maybe do that in our own ways, you know?
I know I do. I'm very much wired like you. Have you read about the Enneagram? Do you know your Enneagram number?
I feel like I used to. I've done it. I don't remember. Whatever number is like when you don't remember, pay attention to that. That's my number.
I think that's called, I think that's called over a certain age, or I've been a mom, or you know, I have too many things going on at the same time. I think, I'm not sure that that's a number, but I'm the exact same way. I like to have my hands in a little bit of everything and always on to the next thing and always creating, but in a very different way than you. You use an actual visual, you know, paintbrush and all of those things, but oh my goodness. Okay, so is this your first book to write? Or
no,
it sounded like maybe you've written more.
Okay. Yeah, I wrote a book, I think it was 2015. It's an art technique book. And it was with a traditional publisher, Northlight Books, who's now, they're owned by Penguin Random House now.
Okay.
But I actually self-published this book for multiple reasons. I appreciated that experience, but I wanted to have a lot more control over this book. I wanted to produce it more quickly. So, you know, it can get really caught up in the publishing world, like 2 or 3 years. Yeah. So I felt like I was ready and I had the means and the audience that I could, you know, create the book myself and make it exactly how I wanted. Cause it's an art book. So it's mostly, large pictures of my art in color. And so I wanted it laid out a certain way. I didn't want to lose control of that. So yeah. And it's a beautiful process. It's fun. You learn a lot about yourself. You know, you get to share your story. So it's amazing. It's an amazing project. Definitely.
So tell me where were the roots of this book? Where did that come from? You talked slightly about it and said that there was a medical struggle. Is that where this story begins, or was it before then?
No, it does. It begins there. So in 2009, I developed a life-threatening allergy to the heat and the sun and my own body heat. So, and that's like I said, when we were talking earlier, I'm wearing sunglasses. So my eyes are allergic to the heat too, or the sun. I was bedridden. I couldn't walk without my body going into anaphylactic shock from my own heat in my body. So I was severely depressed. I cried every day. I was in my early 30s. So I just thought, I can't lay here for 50 years. This can't be my life. I thought I was dying because I was like, am I just going to die? I'm allergic to myself. Right. And yeah, I was really seriously depressed. Like, it was the lowest point of my life. And one day I heard a voice in my head say, you know, now that your life is over, you might as well do what you want and paint. And I was like, I didn't even know I wanted to paint. I mean, I really felt like it was, my heart was speaking to me. But I had nothing else going for me. So I listened and I started painting in bed, and I fell in love with the creative process, which I say like saved me. It held me, it nurtured me. I would forget where I was. So I would paint for hours and then I'd look around and be like, I'm in bed. Like it would just take me somewhere else. So it's very therapeutic. The beauty about that is a lot of artists, or even just people who, you know, anyone towards their creativity, they have a lot of anxiety or fear or doubt. And I had none of that. I just bypassed it because I was so grateful and so in love with the process that, like, it was a beautiful beginning. I honor that process. Like, I always say we have a beautiful relationship and I'm completely devoted because it saved my life. So I will always treat my art kindly because it extended, like, such kindness to me. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. I had no training in painting, and I would say it never judged me. It was a witness. I feel like it held my hand. The creative process just loved me. So I have nothing but love in return. Painting from that place is incredible. And I feel like that's one of the gifts that I can offer people. Whether you're a painter or not, any creative endeavor, you know, if you come from a place of love, it's going to be a beautiful experience. So that's sort of my gift from that darkness. And that's how I first learned to turn burdens into blessings, because that became the greatest blessing in my life. That horrible dark time, it turned out that the best thing that ever happened to me came from it, which is that I'm an artist and I've written some books now. So yeah, I feel like it allowed me to find who I was meant to be, you know. I've been practicing that what I call the art of turning a burden into a blessing. And I feel like everyone has a question in their life that's sort of a theme, and it can change over time, but my question for the past 10 years has been that question: how do you turn burdens into blessings? So anyway, but go ahead.
As you were talking, I was reflecting on the fact that so many of us have not been bedridden, but with the COVID crisis, we have all been stripped away of a lot of different things and almost taken down to our essence a bit, and forced to do things in ways that we hadn't done it before. And you know, your story of being bedridden, you know, it's almost like when somebody says you can't do all of these things, you kind of say, okay, well, if I can do one thing, what am I going to spend my time doing? And I think so many of us have felt that over the last 6-8 months, have felt that same thought process of, okay, you know, if all these doors are shut for me, what door can I open? What's one little tiny thing? And that's that, I mean, I guess that's that same thing, turning a burden into a blessing, right?
Yeah. I feel like what's happening with COVID to all of us is exactly what I went through.
Yeah. It felt like you were basically saying the same thing, except for with your story.
Exactly. Yeah. I know. So when this happened, I'm like, we're good. Like, I've been here.
I've done this.
Yeah, it's temporary. It's a forced reincarnation. That's what I call what happened to me. It was like a forced moment where, you know, I was forced to become something else. And to me, I was forced to become more of who I am. And you're totally right. It stripped me of everything except the non-essential. And what I feel like I was able, because everything else was taken away, I was finally able to like listen to my spirit, my heart wisdom. It was like, when you take away everything else, that's all you have left. So I finally was able to listen. And yeah, in some ways we're all doing that now. And I don't know, I think it's important to remember that this is part of a process that is reflected in nature. And there is a lot of potential and there's a lot of pain. I mean, that was a very painful experience, and I would never deny that transitions are always painful. It's like, you know, in childbirth, they're really painful. There's a reason for the pain though. And there's always a reason for that pain, you know? So, I don't know. I think there's a ton of fruitfulness in that moment.
I've interviewed your interview number 20, and I haven't talked to one person that has not said that this time everyone has said it's been so fruitful. It has been so producing, and in so many different ways. One of the things I wrote down as you were talking was that, you know, it gave you time to listen. My question would be then, now that you've kind of come through that, how are you basically almost like inducing that time or creating that time to still listen? Because that's the one thing I worry about in all of this, is that we have all like had this amazing awakening. And those who are really doing the work are having some amazing awakening. I know that there's some people that are still just binge watching on Netflix and not doing anything, but a lot of people are. But I worry that once things open up and once things get a little bit more back to normal, that we will fall back in those ways of burying ourselves in what I call the weeds of busyness, and, you know, piling all those other things back on. So what are you doing in your life to kind of keep that space clear, to still hear that voice?
Yeah, I think it's something that you have to sort of cultivate and practice. I love that quote you read from The Secret Garden, because the more we practice something like this, the more intuitive it becomes. It just becomes part of us. But it's proven, like, the more you do something, the more it ingrains that memory in your psyche. And it's easier to slide into that once again. I also think that in my life, when I haven't listened, I have always been redirected. Usually, like, if you don't listen the first time, it's going to, like, smack you down. Like, we all just got smacked down. I got smacked down. I know, looking back, I can connect all the dots that was directing me to art. I mean, it was like, if I look back now, oh, yeah. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, of course I'm supposed to be this. This is who I am. But I didn't listen. I was living, like, a fear-based life. And then it was like, okay, now we're just going to take it all away. So I think the cautionary tale is, we can do it by choice, or we can wait until, like, once again, we're kind of forced into it. But, you know, it's such a beautiful practice that once you kind of, you know, you believe in it or you dedicate yourself to it, it's a way to maintain your own health. And, you know, it's listening is, I don't know, I feel like it's a source of power and mm-hmm. wellness. So, you know, if you choose to care for yourself, I think people will continue to listen a little bit more. And there's studies that when you listen to your heart, which has its own brain and is 60 times more powerful than your, you know, this head brain, you're actually, all your body systems begin to flow harmoniously and work together at the optimal level. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to listen to that space. Yeah.
So do you have a time set aside each day that you, like, are you journaling? Are you yoga? Like, what creates that space and that time to listen?
Yeah, I do. You know, I know we're all busy. I start my mornings with yoga and sort of a meditation prayer. It's more of a moving practice usually for me. But, you know, I feel like I'm in constant relationship with this. I always say there's, like, this, whatever you call it, if you want to call it God or the divine or the creative force or spirit, whatever, there's something guiding the universe. You know, there's something, there's a creative force that's guiding. I mean, we can see it in nature. So I feel like I'm in constant relationship and dialogue and listening to that as part of, it brings me so much joy. It is a relationship to me. So I incorporate it in everything I do. But quiet really helps. I really think we have a really noisy culture, and choosing to be quiet is so important. And yeah, that's what I do. I do it when I'm practicing art. I'm in dialogue with the unseen, whether it's your, you know, your great great grandmother or whatever. I'm always, yeah.
Well, in Francis, in the Secret Garden, it says, don't stop believing in the big good thing by whatever name you call it, because the big good thing doesn't stop to worry itself with what you call it. So basically, right. I just summed up what you just said exactly.
Yeah.
I love that. And I think, you know, I think people are afraid to get quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're so busy filling every single conversation and every single nook and cranny of our day with things and noise, like you said, and you know, consumption of all of these things that I think people are, I mean, I don't know why they're afraid, but I think I just have this feeling that they're afraid to be quiet, and maybe they don't like what they're going to hear.
Yeah, it might be disruptive or something.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not really aligned with maybe what in your heart you know you should be doing, maybe that is a little scary. And also maybe you have to change. And that could mean change relationships, and that could get really messy. And but I think if you go in with like a loving approach and just inquisitive approach, like every contemplative spiritual religion or practice, quiet is essential. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, we have so much wisdom. And a lot of our culture seems really lost, ungrounded. It's like, you'll benefit from that listening. It'll never hurt you, you know? I don't think it'll hurt you.
No, it's a great statement. It's a great statement. I always tell people, like, what's the worst case scenario? Like, wow, it's, you just sit in quiet. Like, what if, you know, if your heart doesn't say anything, it's still okay. Like,
right. Yeah.
You're going to be all right.
Hey friends, I know you're loving my interview with Carrie, but I wanted to break in and tell you about her brand new book, The Story of Every Flower. In this new book, you have an opportunity to step inside Carrie's world of vibrant paintings and heartfelt reflections and feel yourself bloom as if you were being transported into a soulful realm of wonder and mystery. Each page invites you to celebrate your own sacred beauty and cultivate the joyful garden within your heart. With love letters to the reader, musings on creativity, reflections of spirit, painting stories, and more, this inspirational connection shares the magic that unfolds when we say yes to our heart wisdom and step into the fullness of our own unique bloom. This book takes you on Carrie's 10-year journey as an artist that begins in despair from the sudden onset of a life-threatening allergy to heat, sun, and her own body. These pages are the gifts she has brought back from the darkness to share with you and will inspire you to ask, how can I turn this burden into a blessing? Kelly Ray Roberts said, I devoured this book. Each page is beautifully unfolding to the next, like the loveliest of poems, reminding me that joy, real, hard-won, abundant joy, can be birthed through the pivotal moments in the darkness of our lives. Like her art and Carrie herself, this book will inspire you to look at your life through the lens of beauty, honoring the blooms that grew from the darkness into the light. I didn't want it to end. Buy your book today at carrieschmidt.com. And while you're there, check out all the amazing art classes and workshops that Carrie has to offer. Now, let's see what blooms from the rest of my conversation with Carrie.
Right. So let's go back to kind of the turning the blessings into burdens into blessings. I did it backwards. The burdens into blessings. Clearly that's part of that is just a mindset, right? I mean, it's really a way of thinking about everything. I'm a self-proclaimed sunshine blower. I think I was wired that way, but I don't think most people are wired, to see the good in everything. And I think it has to become a practice where you can flip a switch and, you know, that when the negativity comes in or the burdenous feeling comes in, that you can, turn it on its head. Do you have any tips or tricks as to how you've been able to do that, or how do you coach people to do that?
Yeah. I think it is something you can train yourself to. And I agree. Yeah. It is a mindset. And, you know, there's like this kind of the new age spiritual movement for a while was all like, be positive. It's not about that at all. First, I think you need to decide that you are in charge of your story. So you're not in.
Wait, say that again.
Yeah. So you have to make that conscious decision that you are in charge of your story. You get to write your story. That doesn't mean that you can control everything that happens to you, because really you can control very little that happens to you, but you can control how you respond. And, you can acknowledge the bad, and you know, everyone always, because my art is so cheerful, people are like, you must be the most cheerful person. And I'm like, no, I'm not. but that, you know, that darkness is essential to the light, just, you know, like in the gardens. I mean, you know, so I think you need to ask yourself, like, how do I move forward in a way that helps me rather than harms me? And that doesn't mean like ignore or forget all the negative. But you know, I was thinking of the book, The Secret Garden, because one way to do this is to look at people who are living an empowered, creative, beautiful life and who are really writing their own story, and then look at them and sort of see how they're doing it. But you can also see people who aren't and learn from them too. So I was thinking of the book, because you can do this with fictional characters, and it's like, in The Secret Garden, you know, Colin's father, I forget his name. But
Archibald Craven.
Yeah. So clearly he's stuck in a chapter. You know, like something bad happened, he's stuck there. He can't move forward. Mm-mm. So you don't want to do that. But you don't want to ignore it either. You just want to acknowledge that that's a chapter in your life. There were some hard things that happened. We all have that. I have that. But, you know, I feel like you have to be able to, like, move on. You have to move forward. So you have two choices, basically. You can move forward in a way that perpetuates that story, that harm, that hurt, or you can choose a different path, you know. So I guess that's one way to do it, is look at people and model, see what they're doing and what the impact is. And you could take every character in The Secret Garden and do that, you know, like
did it differently.
Yeah, like Dickens' mom, she could have been like, I'm poor, I have 12 kids, I, you know, my life is horrible, but she wrote her story in a really beautiful way, and that's what happened. The way she wrote it became the reality of it. And I know, like, Joel Osteen says that, you know, be really careful with what follows I am, because whatever you say after that that'll become your life. So you can bless or curse your life. And so I think that's what it's about. It's a practice. So the more you do it, the easier it is. And I think, like, if I look back and in my own life at the, like, kind of, if I did a graph and the highs and lows, and then I go and look for certain qualities I admire. Like if I say I'm going to look for resilience, where was I resilient? That changes my story from, like, I'm going to look for all my failures. Like, where did I screw up? You know, I mean, you have to make a choice about how you're going to narrate your story. It is like I think it's the most powerful tool we have, is our perspective and our creative ability to choose our story and not let other people write it for us. So
that is so big. The most powerful tool we have is our perspective. I love that. And it's so true. You know, the whole reason I started this podcast is because I wanted to give people tools in their toolbox. And you know, things that, you know, may work for me may not work for you, and vice versa. But you know, if we continue to just give people tools in their toolbox to pull out in different seasons, they might work differently as well. But I feel like the power of our perspective is true. And, you know, you said it's a choice too. You know, we don't get to choose a lot of things. We don't get to choose some of the things that happen to us. We do get to choose how we react. Wow. I love that. Oh my goodness.
I was just thinking of The Secret Garden. I know that's your theme, but you know, even when Colin, when he's telling himself the story that he's weak and he's sick, he's weak and he's sick.
The minute
he changes his story, he's getting better. And so I think there's so much wisdom in that book. And, I don't know.
Well, and I think that story alone, one of the best parts of that wisdom is that he tells himself he's well before he's well.
Yes.
And yeah. I think so many times we're afraid to say those things if they're not, it's like they're not true yet. But being able to stand in the truth that's coming, mm-hmm. That we want to create for ourselves. If you want to be a writer or an artist, or if you just want to be a more positive person, put it out there in the world, start becoming that today, and one step at a time. But say it before you're ready, I think is for me that lesson.
Because
the more you say it, the more it'll come true.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's even like quantum physics is getting behind that formless thoughts have the words are like the first manifestation of them. And so it's really powerful. And I know like Maya Angelou used to say like words are things they like get in your clothes and in your hair and on your walls. So be really careful about the words you choose for yourself. And so I think that again is a simple practice of before you speak, like pause and rewrite that story in your head,
Yeah.
So, and I think another way to do that is mirroring. So you can mirror a friend's story, and of course you're going to be like, oh, you're so brave. You were so strong. And but if it was your story, you'd be like, I'm an idiot.
Okay, right.
So if you start to like mirror for people, then you see your own story reflected and like, oh wait, or you can tell someone a story and ask them to mirror it back to you. Like I was such a mess in my 20s. Like I can't even tell you, like disaster after disaster.
People that are listening on the podcast can't see my hand like shooting up over my head, like a me too.
Yes.
I'm not sure if I can have friends that weren't messes in their 20s. Like I just, I'm not sure I can relate. I was a total mess. Yeah.
I know. And you know what? The story I told about myself was so full of like shame and just, I wouldn't forgive myself. And I told someone part of my story once and she's like, you're not identifying any of your resilience and your strength and your courage. And I looked at her, I'm like, you just changed the whole story for me. Like I was like, oh, you're right. And then it changed. It was like instant healing. Like don't need therapy. Like I was like, oh my gosh, I never saw that. And now I can move forward with this new story. So it can be like that swift, I feel like.
Yes.
Yeah. So you can do that. That's another way. Have a friend and mirror some stories back at each other and just, rewrite it.
I also love that reminder that our words can be that powerful in someone else's life. I think sometimes we forget and, we're told to just sit and listen and be kind and helpful. But sometimes the most helpful thing we can do is to point out those places where they're not seeing the good in their story. They're not seeing the blessing in their burden. So even if you at home can't still see the blessings in your burdens, if you're seeing them, when you start recognizing them in others, tell them, because that's powerful. That is powerful to hear somebody else say those things.
It really is. I've had many times in my life where other people's words have healed me, saved me, just meant so much to me. And I don't think we realize our power, but and the beauty in that is like, that's not denying what I did or what happened. It's just, I'm still acknowledging it, but without the shame. So it's not like I'm like pretending that never happened or ignoring it, but I'm choosing to draw power from it. So it can still exist in my life without that denial of the darkness, which I think is really important. And like, not just being all like, everything's great all the time.
Right.
And that's not the story that we're writing.
No.
Because then we're missing a lot of the power. Yeah.
Well, and you're also, I think you're also negating the lesson that came from the burden. The burden was there. I mean, I feel like the burden was there for a reason. We walk through what we walk through so we can, pass that seed on to someone else and to help someone else and to help ourselves become and bloom into the thing that we're supposed to be. So You know, I completely agree with you. It's not, we're not just painting over it. We're painting alongside it and around it and through it. So tell me a little bit more about your book and how it incorporates this theme into it. You said, you know, there's lots of your art in the book as well, but, you know, it's got words too. Yes. It's not just a picture book.
No, you know, it has like sort of personal journal writing from the last 10 years. So the story starts with, you know, me explaining how I began painting in this dark time. And then I say, you know, these are the gifts I've brought back from the darkness to share with you. And like, these are my hands holding out, you know, this story. So it's just everything since then. I feel like it's every little moment since that time of me sort of uncovering who I am, and also deepening my relationship with the creative force. So I have a lot of reflections on creativity, love letters to the reader. So those are kind of like love letters I would write my younger self, but they're directed to the reader. And these are things that most of these messages came to me while painting. So I like hear a lot of, I don't know, phrases and stories when I'm painting, probably because I'm in a different sort of state of mind and being. So a lot of it's that, and then I share some painting stories. But my hope, like if I thought there was a theme, it would kind of be like that it encourages other people to listen to their heart, and that they honor their own becoming. And you know, there's other moments in the book where I had to turn burdens into blessings. So one, I couldn't afford a studio. I live in the Seattle area. It's really outrageously expensive. I'm a single parent. You know, I'm an artist. I really don't care too much about money. So it's like, I'm like, it's just hard. So I didn't have anywhere to work. And I was really frustrated that I didn't have a space. So one day I was like, you know what? I'm just going to buy a school bus and I'm going to convert it to a studio. And that was a huge burden. Not having space to work was like a huge burden. And it also, I had a little bit of, you know, that story of like shame and I'm a failure and I can't even afford a studio. And, you know, I'm however, like almost 40 or, I mean, you can start to tell yourself some pretty bad stories about yourself. So, you know, it was like, I can rewrite this. Like, I'm going to go buy a bus and paint it pink and flowers. And the thing is that bus has been one of the biggest, again, like biggest blessings in my life. So it's a traveling art studio. It's a store, a traveling store. People love this bus. And so it's like been such a gift, but it required kind of like, you know what? This is not my story. I'm going to change the story. And it's so, there's so much freedom in that, because then you can do things that like nobody else will do. And, you know, and it's connected me to a lot of people, and I mean, people are crazy about this bus. So, but I love it. Yeah. I love it too. So just another example. So that's in the book. But the more you do that, I think the easier it becomes, almost like a game. Like, how can I turn this burden into a blessing? There should be like a board game where they give you like an impossible scenario. But
yes. Oh yeah. I guess. My mother actually came home from a trip and all her plants were dead, and she called, and she was like, and she's actually a very positive person too, but she was complaining. And I was like, well, how exciting, you're going to get to buy all new plants. And she was like, really? Like, you know, but that, I think that I would play that all day long. I would be like the Jeopardy winner of that. Figure out how you do that.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, you know, and I was thinking when you were talking about the bus, that, you know, the burden sometimes gives us the permission to do things differently. I mean, I know for us, so my husband and I, we own a restaurant here in the area we're in. And one of the biggest blessings of COVID and the burden of the rules that they imposed on us was that it gave us the ability to kind of blow up who we thought we were, and to let go of some things, and it was like this giant permission slip to go a different direction, to take whatever it is. And I, I love that. I think that's one of the things I know I'm going to take from this conversation. It's just that, you know, if we can reframe our minds to believe that that burden, you know, is an opportunity to do things differently and to go a different way, then man, I mean, what can stop us, right?
I totally agree. It's like when you get to that point where it's like you have no other choice almost. That's when you find a lot of freedom. It's you, it's like that mother, or what is it? Necessity is the mother of invention. I never would have bought a school bus if I could go like afford a studio.
No.
But I know something so unusual, and I love it. And I love that someday my, you know, descendants are going to be like, my grandmother had a piece. It's like a good story. Like I got to write a cool story, and I'm really grateful. But, you know, I cried. I mean, it's like, I will admit, it's not like glamorous. These things don't come from like glamour. Like, I would cry all the time and call my parents like, I have nowhere to work. I'm a failure. You know, like, I mean, it's bad. But from that, like, how do we rise? Like, what it's that I love the flower, you know, what do you call it? Analogy. It's like, okay, well, I'm here in this darkness. Like, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
It's so empowering, even though you feel kind of disempowered, you know, as an artist in Seattle, I feel a little bit like, hey guys, like, why is there no room for us here? You know? But at the same moment, like you said, when you get to that kind of place, you're just like, okay, I can do whatever I want. Because, you know.
I mean, what do I got to lose? Let's do something different and do something crazy.
Yeah. And you know, my dad really helped me. He's like a conservative businessman. Like, I don't know how I don't know what happened with me. But like, I thought he was going to be like, this is nuts. Like, you can't do that. When you're going to buy a 2002, like, beat up school bus. And so I called him and I'm like, and he's like, that's a great idea. And I was like, Dad, but what if I don't like it? He's like, just sell it. And I was like, oh, you know, so yeah. It's like, if it doesn't work out, you do the next thing. And I think sometimes people forget, like, it's not like it's forever. You try something, maybe it doesn't work. And that is the risk you take when you take a risk. Like, yes. Some things go well, some things don't, but it leads you to that next thing. You have, and again, I think this practice, you have to have faith. You just have to have faith that like things will get better, you know, all the time, and maybe not right away, but just keep going. So yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned your parents, because so everybody at home, first of all, go follow her on social media. It really is like the happiest page you'll ever see, but her parents are hysterical. Her family is hysterical. And so they are her new marketing plan for her book. And she had them write all of these like absolutely hysterical, what would you call it? Testimonials?
Yeah, they're my reviewers. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Her dad, Carrie's dad, Ron, says, buy this book so I can justify paying for Carrie's education. That's his big play. Nora, her 11-year-old, wants everybody to buy this book so mom can buy me a puppy. What else? Oh my gosh, they were so funny. Skylar, her 22-year-old, is terrified that her mom is going to paint her car next. So please keep her busy buying, fulfilling book orders. I mean, they're so funny. I mean, so funny. I thought that was hilarious.
Well, yeah. And again, I mean, I feel like it fits our theme as like,
so
everybody wants like big book reviewers. Like, I need like Oprah to review my book. And I'm like, okay, well, none of that's going to happen. So I'm going to break all the rules and I'm going to be like, my family is going to review my book. So that's the freedom and like just trying to figure out like, well, what can I do with what I have, you know, and what can I do unexpected? Like, you know, I feel like, I don't know, anytime you do something unexpected in your personal life or business, you create some sort of energy and, you know, a reaction. So that worked, actually. I mean, like, people loved those reviews, which I think is hilarious, you know.
Oh my gosh, they're so funny. Okay, yeah. So at the end of every interview, I ask some wrap-up questions, and it comes from my daily practice, my daily journal practice, where I look back on the day before and reflect on the joy, goodness, and growth that I saw, which was also based off the Secret Garden, a quote where Mary basically said she Felt like she would never forget that morning when her garden began to grow. And I don't want to forget those things. So I'd like for my guests to share those things, because once again, when you share, then somebody sees it reflected in their own life, and maybe they're not recognizing the joy, goodness, and growth in their life. So talk to me about what's bringing you joy right now. Like, it can be as silly and simple as a cup of tea, or, you know, deep if you want. Yeah. Who cares?
Well, I mean, first I have to say that practice is really powerful. Like, it might not sound that way to you, because it seems like it's intuitive, but that is shaping your existence. That's huge. So I love that. So joy. Okay. I feel like my life, my days are made up of like just tiny moments of joy, like scattered throughout my day. So one, I'm working on a picture book, and my illustrator lives in Germany. And because of the time difference, she's always sending me new pages in the morning. So I literally wake up every morning, grab my phone, and I'm like, it's like Christmas morning.
It feels like
Christmas. So I open it and she'll have like a new page. And then I'm like, it makes me, I don't know. I can't even explain how joyful this makes me. And then
quickly to the joy, to this book. So you have an illustrator illustrating, so you're writing the words on this one?
Yeah. So my art skills are really limited, I'm not going to lie. I can paint like my flowers, you know, mostly paint women and flowers, but I mean, there's no way I could illustrate this. So I know my limitations. So she, oh my gosh, she's so amazing. I love what she's doing. And this is kind of funny, actually. It's a companion book for my art book. So the story of every flower, I did a picture book for children, because I'm starting to make books, and I always want to have a picture book companion. So this is my story. It is so fun. And it feels a little weird to like make a picture book about yourself. So I'm calling it my memoir, because it's not weird to write a memoir, you know?
No. I think that makes you legit. If you write a memoir, you're officially legit.
So mine is in picture book format, but yeah. It's so fun. I mean, so what I've learned from that is I always want to have a project in my life that brings me this much joy. Like, there should always be something. It doesn't have to be in my business, but in some way, I really want to have this feeling of, in its newness, what it is like something new is coming into my life. And so it's fun. And I think that's important, you know, just to break up the monotony. My other joy is I love chai. And so we have chai every morning after yoga. And I don't know. I mean, that's literally like one of the most joyful things.
Yeah. Do you have a certain brand that you like?
So my beloved Moksha, he makes it. And he is an incredible herbalist, tea blender. He has a nighttime chai, and which is caffeine free, and then a daytime chai. So after yoga, we have chai, and it's like literally one of the happiest moments.
So he like blends it himself, and he has like a recipe and everything.
Yeah, he makes it in bulk, so we have like a week or two supply. And yeah, it's the best chai I've ever had. So I mean, those are the little joys that really get me through my day. And the cool thing about that is you can insert those kind of daily rituals in your day. Yeah. Simple, like having a cup of tea. And yeah. So even though
you don't have to wait. Yeah. People at home, you do not have to wait for joy to come to you. Right. You can create it. Matter of fact, our neighbors, they were supposed to be here this Friday, but she has flowers that come on a regular basis. And that's her. She's like, that's my thing. Like, so actually these are from my garden, but out there we just got some, and I was like, oh, what a great idea. Like, send yourself some flowers, bring some joy in your life anyway.
I love that. I know things are so hard right now for so many of us. And I feel like when things get overwhelming, like it's the end of the world. We had smoke here from the fires. And
yes.
It's like when things like that happen, I get really small. Like I start to look really at really small details of my life, or like the detail of a flower. It's like start to focus small when everything big is too big. It's just like find your joy in like the tiniest little moments. So that's kind of been what COVID's been about, is like finding simple joy all day long. So, yeah.
Go girl. okay. So goodness. So goodness is a little bit deeper. Like, what are you feeling grateful for right now?
Oh, I have so, so much gratitude. It's a practice that I begin every morning with. I'm grateful for my ancestors. So every morning I honor my ancestors, and we have a little conversation. I always envision them showering me with rose petals. So I sweep my arms upward and I envision them showering me with rose petals as blessings. They're blessing me. And then I like pretend I'm kind of scooping them up and throwing them up at them. And so we have a moment. I know our culture doesn't really acknowledge ancestors or the unseen or whatever, but to me, it's a real source of empowerment and connection. So I try to bring that, honor that in my life. Mm-hmm. I feel really empowered and loved and protected. That brings me a lot of joy. And then goodness. And the other, I would say the goodness, I love learning. And so I've really let myself during COVID really dive into podcasts and audiobooks and reading and taking online classes. And I am, and what I've learned is I'm the happiest when I'm learning. I love learning. It's like, it's richness. I think that's wealth. Like, and it's, and it's everywhere and it's free. And it's, I mean, there's so much wealth and you'll never run out of it. You can learn.
We are very blessed to live in a time period where really we can learn about anything at your fingertips. We kid. So I have a senior in high school and a freshman in high school. And sometimes when my senior talks, I'm like, he's like Alexa. Like, he knows everything. And I'm like, and sometimes I question him. He's like, Mom, I watched a YouTube. Like, it's about cars. It's about what you name it. It's all these obscure things. And it's because they have had information just flowing. If they want it. I have other friends, whose kids aren't like that, but he's the same way. He loves to always be learning, and he's best when he's doing that. But it's what a blessing to live at a time like this.
Yeah. It's so amazing. I love feeling that sort of expansion or transformation, or something's happening when you like didn't know something and now you know it, and it's just like amazing. So I would say that that's a source of goodness for sure.
Awesome. All right, and then the final question is growth. What life lessons or signs of progress are you seeing and feeling in your life right now?
Oh, there's so much growth this year, and like a lot of it forced. I had to start doing online classes and things, so that was sort of forced growth. But I think for me is towards honoring my spirit. So even in my business, I kind of adapted this mantra, a spirit first. So when I make decisions, I'm really trying to honor my spirit before other things. And I feel like, that's where my life is heading all the time, is trying to uncover more and more of that kind of that mystery, that unknown. So and that'll be a lifetime of growing. And I love the mystery. I love like trying to grow into that and what that means. So I guess that, that's the challenge. That's the growth.
I love that. Carrie, thank you so much for coming on with me today. Those who are listening don't know that she's sitting in her car because of COVID. There's a million reasons, right? But it doesn't matter. That's what's amazing about this world. We can do this anywhere we are. Tell people how they can follow you, find you, buy your book, all the things.
Yeah, so I'm really active on Instagram, and it's at Carrie Schmidt. I don't know if you just want to have it in writing.
Yes, it'll be on all the things, so don't panic.
Yeah, because this spelling can be funny. And then I have a website, carrieschmidtdesign.com, and you can find my book there. I'm not selling my book on Amazon as a personal choice because I really love independent bookshops, and I kind of want to support that if I can. But it is available on my website.
So is it out in the world yet? Like, I mean, I knew it kind of got delayed a little bit because of COVID. So is it out yet?
It should be here in a week, in the max 2 weeks. So it'll be here soon. And it's still, it's going to be on sale $10 off until it gets here. So there's a pre-order. So I think by the time this airs, So if you get it early, save a little.
Oh my goodness. I'm so excited. Make sure you go and follow our Instagrams, and we'll be giving away some fun things at the end of this journey as well. So thank you to everyone who is watching or listening at home. This episode was actually inspired by the words of my great-great-grandmother in the Secret Garden. Specifically, it says, "He left the valley and went on his wandering way again. But strange as it seemed to him, there were minutes, sometimes half hours, when without his knowing why, the black burden seemed to lift itself again, and he knew he was a living man and not a dead one. Slowly, slowly, for no reason that he knew of, he was coming alive with the garden." Ooh, that just gave me goosebumps. You know, here's the deal. My hope is that you learning to turn your burdens into blessings, when you start doing that, that you too will begin to come alive through this new life tending and really life giving practice. So until next time, y'all, blessings and blooms. Thanks, Carrie.
Thank you so much.
Hey friends, I hope you loved that conversation as much as I did. This practice and really mind shift of turning your burdens into blessings can be life-giving on your life tending journey. So give it a try. And y'all, go buy her book, check out her classes, and follow Carrie on all the things. You won't be sorry. And remember, this is the fifth episode in our Practice Of series, so if you have missed any of the others, I encourage you to go back and take a listen. Then stay tuned here for next week's episode as we continue this Practice Of series with my friend and photographer, Bella Shearhart. She comes and chats with us about the practice of body positivity. So if you struggle with loving your body, then make sure to tune in next week. Finally, thank you to all of you who subscribed to the podcast and left reviews. If you haven't done this, please take a minute today to do so. 5-star reviews are, of course, our favorites, but every time you take a minute to review, you actually help others see this podcast in their feeds. Thanks again for spending time with me today on this life-tending journey. Until next time, y'all, blessings and blooms.